Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Albert Bramante, the founder and CEO of New York City-based Bramante Artists. Albert is a former manager turned agent specializing in actors for theater, television, commercials, and film. With a quarter century of success, he's got great insight into the business. So if you're an aspiring actor or know one, or simply just curious, you're not going to want to miss this. Hey, before we begin, please hit like, follow, and subscribe, and any other button you happen to see down there. Also, please leave a comment. I'm still trying to convince that stubborn algorithm that people are paying attention. Thanks. And we are welcoming to the show Albert Bramante, the owner of Bramante Artists in New York City. You're a talent agent, as I understand it. Is that correct?
That's correct. And thank you, Roger, for having me on.
Very welcome. My honor. And I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I really do. Let's talk about, now you focus primarily on actors. Is that correct?
Yes. Theatrical and commercial in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you get into that? I got to ask.
It's a long story, but I kind of started off as an actor myself. I was interested in the arts a little bit, you know, growing up. I was in a drama club in high school. I took some acting classes in college as electives, and I found it very interesting and fun. And I think it was just more about the creativity aspect of it. And that was so much fun and fulfilling. So I graduated. Now, at this point in my life, when I just received my master's degree, I was really laser focused on just going for a PhD in psychology and not even focusing on show business. So if you told me I'd be working in show business while I was in college, I would have laughed.
So you are by training a psychologist?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Mm-hmm. Now, and like I said, I would have laughed if you had said someone told me to be working in show business, you know, in your life. Uh-huh. Because I at that time I didn't know that I would be interested in it or really a pathway to that. So I started, after I received my master's degree, I started working in New York City with a couple different nonprofit organizations, especially right around the time of 9/11. And so in these nonprofit organizations, we were kind of helping with like entitlements and, you know, helping families who were displaced or who lost loved ones that needed support. And so I found myself in just a company of actors. Okay. In New York. And they were all like, oh, you should go into acting. You have a great look. And then I was cast in a short, you know, indie film that, you know, really obscure. But I enjoyed it. And so I kind of pursued acting for about 2 years. And I did a couple of local commercials. I did a couple of indie films. And it started to become not necessarily fun anymore for me, at least for me. But, however, being around actors was everything I wanted. You know, the creative people, the creative energy. This is my home. Now, what capacity? I still didn't know yet. You know, what capacity was going to be at. I tried the other things. I volunteered at film festivals. I worked in casting a little bit. I did a couple of casting internships and just working on different films, you know, casting, you know, smaller roles sometimes, uh-huh, supporting roles. And I really enjoyed it. And I found myself like really liking playing matchmaker in a sense.
Uh-huh.
Matching actors to roles. It was like a puzzle. You know, I put pieces together in a puzzle. And it was so much enlightening. I was like, how do I do this? And what do I need to do? And I kept thinking to myself, I always wanted to start a business. I'm like, well, let me try my hand at managing and representing actors. So in 2004, I first founded my first company,
which
initially started off as a personal management company for actors and for models. And that was fulfilling. I was booking people in commercials and print. But I wanted to do TV, film, and theater as well, not just commercial and print and
Okay.
modeling. That was fun. It was fulfilling. But I wanted to do much more than that. I had a lot of my acting clients at times saying, okay, I really want to work in soaps. I want to work in Law and Order. I want to do all this, stuff. So I realized kind of like the path then for me was to become an agent, switch from a management to becoming a licensed agent, talent agent. And so in 2007, I started that process of transitioning from a manager to an agent. Ironically, most people in this industry do the opposite. They're agents for many years and then become personal managers. I went the opposite route.
Can we give a get a quick for people who don't know anything about anything like me, a quick thumbnail description of the difference between a manager and an agent?
And that's a very good question because nowadays the lines are a little bit blurred,
Okay.
but a manager is more of a hands-on support for an actor. They work on the actor's overall career, branding, helping with headshots, helping them with marketing materials, helping with PR strategy, being like the confidant of the actor, whatever it is, the advocate. Fully, and they're globally. The agent is more of the day-to-day employment, getting our clients work.
Ah, okay.
So, I because I have the managing background and the psychology background, I find myself still doing the duties of a manager, but the ultimate difference is an agent might not hold your hand as a manager would for an actor. The agent's primary role is to get that actor work.
Gotcha.
And if it's a very busy season or a busy time, we may not have the time to do any hand-holding or having meetings with actors just to talk about strategy.
Right.
So there is that more of that, okay, focus on just getting the actor work day to day. So that's where the big difference is. Now, managers can still pitch, technically. When I started as an agent, fundamentally, we're employment agents. So I had to go through the process of becoming an employment agent,
Gotcha.
which means, legally I have the ability to negotiate contracts and I can take commission off of jobs that are booked. So typically, in the way an agent, or at least a legitimate and not a scam agency works, we get commission off of jobs that an actor books. Typically it's 10%. So we get 10% if an actor secures a role that we had secured or that happened during the contract. That's the only way a talent representative should be making money. If anybody's listening and they're thinking about going to acting, the biggest red flag to look for are anyone that asks for money up front and says, here you need to invest in these classes, you need to invest in these headshots from this particular person or this particular agency, and here's some packages for you. Run, if that happens. Because now headshots are the calling card, they're important, and so are classes. But the agent role is not about getting you that. Now, of course, in order to get an agent, you need to have solid headshots, you need to have solid training. That
Right.
goes without saying. However, be very mindful of an agent particularly pushing a specific and only, this is the only class you can take, or this is the only photographer you can use. Because there's a strong chance that that agent or whoever's calling themselves an agent is getting a kickback from
Sure.
that acting school or that photographer. So I would avoid that. Now, I do have a standard list. Like, if my clients say, hey, I want to get some new headshots for you recommend, I have a list of photographers. I also have a list of acting classes. But it's still, at the end of the day, their choice, their prerogative, who they want to go to that. And I don't, receive a dime from that.
Right. So, okay. So that's as a musician, or well, not active very much anymore, but as a musician, we have what we call booking agents, which is basically the same thing. that you're talking about, as opposed to it's just a difference of nomenclature. But yeah, the agent would take a percentage, and it's their obligation to find me work, because that's the only way they make a living, is if I make a living. So now, in their particular case, they have a Rolodex full of people that they can contact. They know different clubs and different. So you must have contacts within the industry, whether it's theater or television or what have you.
Yeah, I have contacts. Plus, there's for actors at least, and there's a daily job board that we get, the talent representatives get. It's called the breakdowns, and that is all of the projects that are casting that are film, TV, theater,
Oh.
and commercials, and they come out on a daily basis. And it's and what we do is we have our talent listed, their headshots, their resume, their reels. And then we submit, pitch their materials for the particular role that's being, that they're searching for. And then, as an agent, of course, we do access the Rolodex. And after I may submit an actor through the proper channels, if the actor is extremely right for that role, I will either pick up the phone or send an email saying, "Hey, the casting heads up that you here's, so and so, and I feel strongly to be right for the role."
So if you don't do that every time, then you're taken a little more seriously than if you spam them.
Yeah, no, I don't pitch in every time, because the one thing the way I look at this, an agent's job is to help make casting directors' jobs a bit easier. I don't want to make it more difficult. That's obviously, and I'm not going to spam them. And otherwise, it just becomes, okay, here's this guy again, delete. Here's this guy again, delete. Or I'm not answering this guy's phone call anymore. So it's quality over quantity. If I'm going to pitch an actor, it really has to be right. Because again, my name and reputation are on the line.
So how does having a psychology degree, how does that help you in the way you work with your talent or in your sales pitch, for that matter?
For me, at least working on the talent side, it helps me understand the motivation, the behavior, the underlying reasons. And, I can, if need be, and sometimes this happens, where I become almost the unofficial therapist in a sense, where if
Yes.
someone's having a hard time, I can talk them through it. Or at least I can understand a lot of quirks that might maybe other agents and managers who are not train may get annoyed by these actors, or may get fed up on certain behaviors. For me, I understand it on a more deeper level, so I can connect a little bit more in that way. And as far as the sales pitch, I mean, for me, it's about developing relationships. So for me, it's not just, hey, you need to see my client. It's sort of like, okay, let me nurture this a bit. Let me become friends with you in a sense, like how was your day, and all of that. And then, oh, by the way, I have somebody, for this who you that I think would be great, and here's why. So the one thing, especially if I'm gonna be pitching an actor, I like to have something very specific, not just, hey, they're a great actor. Of course they would be a great actor, that's why I'm representing them. But what do I have to say? Because they're getting hundreds of, submissions a day. And I'm not the only agent submitting. I'm mindful of that. So they're not going to want to hear from me every time for little things. So I try to pick out the best rates for the best actor at the right time. And I go in and out. The one thing I'm very succinct when I pitch. I'm not going to sit and keep, if it's a phone call, I'm not going to keep them on the phone for more than, a minute. I'm not going to keep them in an email, reading an email that's, three, four, five paragraphs long. They don't have time for that. It's okay. Next, if I can get 10 seconds of their time, I'm happy. Here's why. And that's it. Thank you. And have a great day. Have a rest of your day. The one thing that I think, with my psychology background, that really helps is not to be salesy. A lot of it's great to be a good closer or great to be a very good salesperson. And there are a lot of great, I mean, if you go to like the top tiers, the William Morris and Gersh or all those people that are like really top tier, they're hard when they close. I mean, they're relentless, and that's great. That's not my style.
Right. It's good, I think, that you recognize that. Be
Yeah.
honest to yourself and be honest with your clients, so.
And that's one thing too. I'm very transparent with my clients. So when they have a meet, if we're going to talk about like working together, so one of the guarantees I say up front is there are no guarantees, really. Think about it.
Sure.
I'm not here. I'm not going to tell you I'm going to make you a star. I'm not going to fulfill pipe dreams. I'm not going to blow smoke up your, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say that we're going to work together and we're going to work hard. And then maybe times we have to modify the way our marketing, the marketing materials. You have to be open to that. You have to be open to changing your approach as an actor, maybe getting new headshots if it's not working out or working out on your overall package a bit. And just being flexible. Like, look, we're going to work together. What I can guarantee you is I'm going to work hard on your behalf. I can guarantee that I'm going to advocate when necessary. But specific outcome, I'm not going to tell you I'm going to get you this amount of auditions. I'm not going to guarantee that I'm going to get you on TV. Because ultimately, and the reality of this is even if I get, when I get that appointment, that's all I did. You as the actor, when you go in there, has to deliver. I could be the best friends of a specific casting director. If someone's not a good actor, they're not getting called in. Doesn't matter how. I mean, I could be going to lunch with the casting director every day and, know them on a first name basis. If the person's not a good actor, they're not getting called in. It's just that's the reality of business. Because even some actors are good friends with casting directors and will sometimes complain, like, why isn't this one calling me? I'm like, well, that's because their friend does not mean that. You're talking a different domain now.
I totally get that. So, well, your business has evolved a little bit from 2007 to today, correct?
Yeah,
So,
but I like to think so, at least.
I mean, you mentioned a moment ago, you used the phrase top tier agencies. Is that a goal for you to become one of those top tier agencies or?
Yes, and no. I definitely want to be, I've always strived to be better, and I don't want to lose my soul, and I don't want to sacrifice, the relationship I have with actors and the relationship I have with the industry, and I don't want to kind of sell my soul. So what I mean by that is the top tier agencies very often, and this is what I hear from clients from actors that even rep by them is. My agent's a jerk. My agents, they're getting me work. I'm happy, but I'll never go out, go to dinner with them. I'll never be their friend. And of course, that's really not needed. Of course, this type of a relationship, you don't have to be friends, a buddy buddy relationship. But I can't do that. I can't be that nasty. That's just not in my DNA. So will that prevent me from being a CAA or a William Morris type? I'm not sure, but I also don't want to get so big to the point where I can't manage my team anymore. Because I've also heard a lot of actors who've been signed and picked up by these agencies only to rarely hear from them afterwards.
Oh, my. Yeah, and excuse me, and these contracts are exclusive, right?
Yeah, and I'm exclusive too for at least a year, initially, like, so we work exclusively with actors, so our contract is for 1 year only initially in the beginning, and then of course at the end of the year we can reflect, and the actor and the agent can both decide whether this is a match or thank you, we're gonna move on, nothing personal, and they decide not to renew, which is fine, and and that's one thing I can really pride myself on is. A lot of I have very good relationships with actors that are not that I'm not representing anymore. Some agents may get, or managers may get their feelings hurt, like they were just dumped by their client. For me, I separate it. I'm like, this is not a personal thing. This is a personal decision.
That's just
This is a
business.
business. It's business. And, I root for their success. So, again, sometimes what I find it was very interesting is it's the synergy even helps, because sometimes there are clients who come to me saying, I haven't gone out at all, these other agents, and now all of a sudden I'm getting them out. And then some clients, and I'll be completely honest, where I may not have had success getting them out, but now they're another agency, and they're thriving and great, and I'm going to be a cheerleader, because I feel like at the end of the day, it's about relationships.
Right.
Because the way I look at it, and this is why I don't, I one of the biggest things I'm always, and I tell my clients this all the time, you don't want to burn bridges, because this is small. As much as it's a lot of actors and a big, it's a big yet small industry. I'll say that.
Yeah, right.
It's big, but it's small. So you don't want to burn bridges. And the same thing I go for even my former clients. I don't want to burn bridges, because you could never know. I've had former clients refer new actors to me saying, hey, I have this acting colleague. I think they'd be right for it. And great, I'll take a meeting.
Sure.
And so that's one thing I can pride myself on, is I like, and this is where I think my background kind of helps a little bit. By not taking it personal, looking at it from a business perspective. And even when my clients, like going even a step further, they can apply this with their own auditions. A lot of actors get so wrapped up, and it's because they're passionate, and a lot of times they're empaths, and that's what helps them connect to the character. They take a lot of times the no's personally if they don't get the role. Oh, they don't like me. Or, the cast director doesn't like me, the producer doesn't like me, the director doesn't like me. And the one thing that I really advocate for is to take yourself out of that equation. It is not personal.
It's
It's
somebody else's
just
artistic vision. You're either part of it or you're not.
right. And that you're just not right for the role. It has nothing to do with you as a person. So, and that's why I hear a lot of people, they hear what I do, or they, because I work with actors, I'll hear a lot of people say, well, I tried acting, I just don't like the rejection. Or some people say, I always want to be an actor, I just don't like the rejection. And the one thing, like the challenge, and maybe this is my psychology background thinking, I'm sure it is what if we reframe that as not rejection? Like there's no such thing as rejection. And maybe reframe it as it's a more of a gentle reminder that your services are not needed today.
I think
And
there's also in there somewhere along the line, I've run into it with musicians that have been told for years that they're the best thing ever, kind of thing. And then they find out they're not, and they're just heartbroken, and it's sometimes we all need a little reality check. And
yeah.
then you either pick up from there and move forward and use that, or you just kind of bail.
Or you leave. And that's one thing I noticed, even with my work with actors. A lot of times, what they'll do is they'll go to either a college. Like most actors in New York or LA are not from New York or LA. They're usually transplants
Right.
from someplace in the Midwest. So they'll go to college, let's say in Illinois or Texas. I'm using this as an example, and or Michigan, and they go into their theater program, and because it's a small pond, they're cast in everything. They're in
Right.
every play that the college puts on. They're maybe in a local town. They're in every film that's being produced by the student filmmakers, the local filmmakers there. So now, of course, which is great, and that's wonderful. But you're now going to move into a pond, which is 10 or even 100 times larger than what your market is. So you're not gonna just go on a couple auditions and immediately land in Broadway. You're not gonna come to New York and then tomorrow land in Broadway. That may happen in some rare instances, where the actor happened to be at the right place at the right time at the right moment, but those are rare.
Right. So what advice would you give somebody if they're moving to New York and they want to set the city on fire?
Have a plan, a business plan. Plan on, and this may not maybe the most popular person to this newbie actors. Plan at least a 10 or 20 year plan.
Wow, okay.
That's realistic. You need that time to develop a relationship, develop your craft. So what I recommend is having saving some income. Number one, because unfortunately New York or LA is not cheap, to
Right.
live. Work on a survival job or work on something, some business or some job. That's why a lot of actors, I mean, it's stereotypical, but a lot of actors were, serving a catering industry
Right.
because you need
It's
to pay
all
the
that's
bills.
almost a cliche.
Yeah, or they work in temp work or they do office work, and they have their own real estate businesses, or they work in fitness. So I would say have definitely a plan when you move to New York. What's going to get you income? To kind of help you stay sustainable. And this has to be a long process. It's a journey. It's not a sprint. It may take a couple of years before you get any traction when you come to New York. So be prepared for that. The bright lights are great. You step onto Broadway, it's so energizing. But it's going to be a process. It takes a lot of grit. It takes a lot of resilience. And unfortunately, I feel a lot of these acting programs do not train the actors in this area about grit, resilience, and persistence and patience.
We had I used to teach guitar at college, and one of my biggest complaints with the music programs at colleges everywhere, and that's beginning to change now, but the complaint then was, we teach these kids how to play the dickens out of their instruments, and then we don't teach them how to make a living with it. And so it's so you must be getting kids straight out of acting school coming in there and not realizing that there's just a whole other side of this. It's called a business for a reason, and they don't get it.
Right, and that's why it's called show business. What's the second word in that? Business.
Yeah,
So
and often enough, it's the larger of the two.
it really is. It really is. So I you're really the CEO of your own company, whether you're a musician, whether you're an actor, you're
Exactly.
the CEO of your own company. So it has to be treated as such. And what I've been seeing, especially from my many years in the industry, a lot of actors within 1 to 2 years of graduating are not acting anymore.
Right,
And I'm
right.
like, you just spent 80,000, 100,000, $150,000 on a program that you're not using because you didn't have a plan in place and or a realistic understanding of the industry. Because again, it might work when you were in college, when you were cast and everything, and all you had to do was just show up and you got the role. It doesn't work that way in the larger markets. It there's a lot of time and you got to plant the seed. So that would I would say be the biggest thing is, I wish all young actors knew is the resistance and the grit that's needed and having a realistic expectation when you're moving to a perform like a hub city that it's going to take a little bit of time.
So how has, I mean, 50 years ago, if you wanted to be in theater, you had to be in New York. I mean, there was, or maybe Chicago. Today, we have all the social media stuff. We have these 90-second TikTok videos and 30-second TikTok videos and YouTube videos and so on and so forth. How has that impacted the theater scene or the acting scene in general?
It definitely made an impact. Nothing's gonna replace live theater.
Right.
Like even during like 2020 during COVID, a lot of people tried to put plays up over Zoom, and it just didn't. It wasn't working. It so live theater, I don't think will ever be replaced. Now, the social media, I mean, and some of these, TikTok stars are making millions of dollars a year, and literally, on the surface, it looks like you're doing nothing. Maybe doing some, like I read, there was this one influencer from Africa who would make, just making faces at videos, made, several million. I'm like, hello, I think that as an agent, I'm like, where I could probably get 100 people to do that. Where can, where to find the millions there? But I think it changed a bit. And at the same time, it also makes it a little bit more accessible to do stuff. So you can put on short films. It's easier now to do stuff on your phone, to film stuff. You don't need necessarily a large studio to
Correct.
produce a film anymore. A lot of the latest cameras on cell phones are really high def, and they have editing that's accessible. So I think on one hand, it's a little easier to make content now, but New York and Chicago are still like the theater capital of the world. Although, like the DC area is also
Oh, really?
thriving.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, like the DC, Virginia theater scene has
Okay.
been growing the past like 10, 15 years. So you can make a living there. But when even when I started, it was like, if you wanted to work in theater, you went to New York. If you wanted to work in television, you went to LA.
Right.
And that was the reality of it. You an actor may, we had the soaps when we started. There were three major soap operas, Guiding Light, The World, and Different Strokes, all, filmed in New York, All My Children. And afterwards, the soaps kind of just didn't last.
Right.
And so maybe you got one or two TV shows, and then you did that, and that was time to go to LA. Since Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and all and Apple and all other streaming services started putting their head, their hats in the ring to produce, the amount of TV shows has, I would say, more than quadrupled.
Oh, really?
So, especially in New York.
Okay.
So, what we're seeing is now a lot of actors are staying in New York for TV,
Oh, okay.
and even some actors are coming out from LA to New York for TV, which is something I never thought I would have saw if you asked me this in 2007, to the, between 2004
Sure.
and 2007. So the industry is changing. So as an actor, what the interesting thing I think what's important is you have to be kind of open to different things. Now, some actors may not be big on social media. I don't require my actors to be have a presence in social media. As long as we can find you online, through a website or somehow, that's great. Some actors are off the grid, which is fine, social media wise. Also, at the same time, you could be an influencer on social media but not be a good actor.
True.
Because one, I remember there was one show. It was a Netflix series. Initially, when the producers wanted to just really cast influencers, with millions of followers as the lead roles, and so they had a casting call for all of these, and I brought like, dozens of them in, and they were so frustrated because not a single one of them knew how to read a script and knew how to,
Sure.
convey a character because it's a lot different. So they kind of scratched that idea and just went with actors, which is what they should have did. But being a so I don't I my point is I don't think actors should be obsessing over social media presence.
Gotcha. I've my standard joke. I have this little boutique podcast, and I've focused primarily on people in the arts, so anyway, but I've told people, I said if I really wanted to have a lot of hits and a lot of people, following, I'd probably need a 14-year-old girl giving lifestyle advice. So,
Yeah, or the latest makeup tutorial, something like that. Yeah.
So, but it doesn't really work that way. So, Albert, thank you so much for your time. Believe it or not, our time is up, and I'm going to have to say
Well,
goodbye.
this is great. Thank you, Roger, for inviting me again.
Yeah, I hope you'll come back again. I'd like to continue this conversation.
I would love to come back at some point. Just let me know.
Thank you. See you now. I want to thank Albert for taking the time to come on the show and giving us all a peek behind the curtain. If you'd like to know more about Albert, there's a link in the description below. Thank you for joining us. Please hit like, follow, or subscribe. Leave a message. Tell your friends. Sorry, I didn't mean to give you a homework assignment, but you know that stuff really helps. I hope you'll check out some more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.